Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Kuf Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 9 lines from the top of Daf Kuf Ches. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we notice the triangle shape in the Gemara text, one of our series markings. We glance at the side in the margin, one of our special features of the Shas Ozer, the cornerstone of Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shiurim, the Nosei / Mivneh heading, the Nosei topic heading, Mivneh structural note. The triangle that you see highlights Chovos Tziburios, public obligations, called public sector obligations, L'shalem Avuram, to pay for them. One, Chizuk Choyma Suir. In the time of the Gemara, it was not uncommon to have walled cities for protection purposes. The payment, who is expected to pay for the strengthening of the municipal walls? Number two, Chafiras Mekoros Mayim, the digging for water supply. We will refer to Gvia Miyasayimim, collection from orphans. Gvia Mitalmidei Chachamim, collection from Torah scholars. Now the Gemara. Omar of Yehuda, Hakol Leigli Gapo, Veafilu Miyasmi. Everyone is expected for Igli Gapo. That has to do with building and strengthening the city's walls. Even collection from orphans. In certain areas of Halacha, we find that we do not collect from orphans for various debts, we'll say. But in this case, even from orphans, from what they inherited, collection is to be made. Avol Rabbonan lo, but we do not collect for a municipal wall strengthening from Talmidei Chachamim, from Torah scholars. And you'll ask, well, why not? So the primary point to understand is, as we said in our introductory remarks, and Rashi makes mention of this, he says, Shelo yikones tzava seinim le'ir. The wall is to protect, to prevent the entrance of enemy armed forces. When it comes to Talmidei Chachamim, so the Gemara itself asks, my time, well, why do you say that they do not have to pay for that? The Gemara answers, Rabbonan lo tzrichi netirusa. The rabbis, the Torah scholars, do not require, we'll say, artificial means of protection, man-made means of protection. Why not? So the Rashi quotes a posuk. First Rashi says, Teirosu mishamroso. The Torah that he studies serves as his protection, kedichtiv, and the Rashi quotes the pasuk from the book of Proverbs, from Mishlei Perek Vav, b'shach v'cha tishmor alecha. Even when the Torah scholar goes to sleep, so he's basically defenseless, the Torah protects him. So you see an interesting, we'll say, convergence of philosophical realms. You have the realm of the spiritual and the realm of the physical. And when it comes to the Torah scholar, the spiritual power of Torah study replaces the need for the physical protection afforded by walls. Quite an interesting idea. Let us continue in the Gemara. L'karya de pasya. Karya is the digging for pasya. Pasya, translated, in a literal form, Rashi says, has to do with a vessel that holds beverages, holds water. So the word pasya has taken on the meaning of water itself. So this means the digging for water, subterranean water supply. That needs to be paid for. Ve'afilu me'rabbanan, even the Torah scholars, and Rashi says immediately they need to drink, and therefore they have to pay for what they need. What just before physical artificial means of protection, they do not need, hence they don't have to pay for it. Now, when it comes to digging for water, we say that the Rabbonan also must participate. But v'lo amoran el delo nafke b'ichluza, this idea of their participating is qualified, provided that the method of seeking the water is, we'll say, is financial, is payment. You hire a company, you hire workers to do the digging. However, if it's nafke, nafke means to go out, b'ichluza, a general population where they were members of the community themselves, where the general population would go out and do the digging, there the Talmidei Chachamim are not expected to join in. And that's what the Gemara says, Avol l'uchluza lo. Why? The Rabbonan lav b'nei meipak b'uchluza ninu. It's beneath the dignity of a Torah scholar to go out with the general public holding shovels and other digging devices in hand, seeking a subterranean water supply. So when the Gemara makes reference to Karya de Pasya and the expectation that Rabbonan participate, that's when it's a matter of contributing money toward that ends, but not to actually physically participate in the digging effort. Omar Rav Yehuda, Lekarya de Nahara. Notice we have a dashed underline, Karya de Nahara, and the next line, also a dash underlining, Maya de Mitra. In this section of Gemara, we will be discussing dredging out a river, dredging out a river that, in which, in the course of time, a lot of debris may have accumulated in the river, interfering with the swiftness of the water flow, causing possible backup. And likewise, we will be dealing with the cleaning out of a, without being literal, but roughly speaking, a public sewage line. When we say sewage line, it would be more accurate to speak in terms of a ditch, an exposed ditch that wastewater ran through, naturally in a declining fashion, otherwise water won't flow. And what happens when these entities, whether it's the river or the we'll call it that, the municipal waste ditch, become accumulated with debris. That's as far as a general heading for what we're about to involve ourselves with. The approaches, you'll find out, are actually opposite in a certain sense, and that will become much clearer when we study it in the Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda, Lekarya de Nahara. When it comes to digging out, dredging out a river, you have people that are upstream and people that are downstream. Tatoi Messiah Eloi. Those that are downstream must assist those that are upstream in dredging out the river. In other words, the Tatoi, those that are downstream, stand to benefit themselves from the river being dredged out. Otherwise, if there's a lot of debris, so the water level reaching the people downstream will be reduced. The water flow is not as swift, it's almost as if the water is being dammed up, so it's not going to reach them, and they need the availability of the water from the river for their fields. So it's to their advantage, to the advantage of the people that are downstream, to make sure that whatever debris needs to be cleared out upstream is done. However, Eloi, those people that are upstream, lo misai tatoi, if the debris accumulates downstream, the people that are upstream do not have any benefit from the clearance of the debris that is downstream. Hence, Eloi, those that are upstream, when it comes to clearing debris downstream, they're not expected to participate. Let us look at the Rashi, who will explain, hopefully, what we already said, but it's will appear in clearer terms by studying the Rashi together. The Rashi that we're looking at is about halfway down the narrow lines, Lekaryo Dinahara, Kishimalas Sirtoin. Sirtoin is debris. So when a debris accumulates in a river, the Noiflim Boavonim and stones fall in, Umaakvin Mutsis Hamayim, and they restrain or retard the river, the current, the flow of the water. And they would then dig out and clear away the debris, enabling the water to flow freely once again. So we spoke about those that are downstream. They're called tatoi. Tatoi, misai, assist, le'uloi, those that are upstream. Keshel yoinim misaknim kenegdon lemala, when the people located upstream, where the debris had accumulated, yesh ala tachtoin l'sayon, it is upon the obligatory upon the people downstream to go up there to those that are upstream and assist in the clearing and dredging. She michshelim helyonim akfin mayim mileirate, the debris that accumulated upstream prevents the water flow from continuing downstream. Nimsa tikun elyonim lezra zatachtonim. The net result then is that the repairing and rectifying of the situation upstream is to the benefit of those downstream. Avol, Rashi continues, well, yoinim ain't suichim l'seyas zatachtonim. Let's say the accumulation of the debris started only downstream. So when the rectification takes place downstream, shetikun shel mata eino le'ezras elyonim elorosam, the removal of the debris downstream, in fact, doesn't assist those upstream. If anything, it's to their detriment. Shekolzman shamayim rotzim lemato hanor mismayit lemala vehasodos shelahem misyabshois. That as long as the debris is cleared from downstream, the water flow is more rapid, and the water level of the river is therefore reduced, and hence the availability of the water to those upstream, being that the water content in the river channel, because of the free flow of the water content in the river channel is reduced. So those that are upstream lose the benefit of a higher water level. And therefore, as we just said, the removal of the debris that accumulated downstream is not to the benefit, it's to the detriment of those upstream. So you can't expect those people upstream to assist in a process that will lead to their own detriment. We turn back to the Gemara, and you see the chilufa, the Gemara says, and the opposite is the case b'maya demitra, literally with regard to rain water. But that's a very, very terse presentation of what is really taking place. We explained before, maya demitra has to do with a ditch that runs through the runs along the streets of a city, and the its primary purpose is to assist in the removal of the rainwater from accumulating in the street, so it flows into this ditch as exists to this very day when it comes to drainage systems. So it enables the rainwater to drain away. However, in addition to that, it also served as a drainage for sewage. And by saying chilufa means the opposite, which means that in case of clearing out a public drain, the upper ones, the people located uphill, will say, if we're dealing with a city that's, well, in any situation, you have to have a certain amount of elevation to ensure a decline, enabling the water to flow downwards. So the upper ones are expected to assist the lower ones. The lower ones, if debris accumulates higher up in the drain ditch, the lower ones don't have to assist the upper ones. And the same logic applies, of course, in an opposite direction. Namely, since you're dealing with the removal of sewage, if there accumulates backup or debris retarding the flow, we'll call it downstream vis-a-vis the ditch, so there's going to be backup affecting those that are higher up. So the people that are higher up, it's in their interest to clear away the debris from accumulation downstream. However, if debris accumulates higher up, those that are downstream are not affected by the stoppage of flow, because what we're talking about is the flow of garbage, of debris, and if it's stopped higher up, so the people downstream vis-a-vis the ditch are not affected in any adverse fashion. And we can see this once again in the Rashi by learning it together. The Chilufa B'mayo Demitra, where we left off in the Rashi. Kigon Be'ir Shamayim Koshim Laharbois Tit, in a city where the water, with the accumulation of water, there was also increased mud. L'kalkil Sedrochim, and in a city where if the water accumulates, there will be a lot of mud, and the streets will be ruined. In order to solve the water accumulation in streets, what do they do? The Oislam Haritz. They create a ditch, the Morad, in a decline. Lahirid Hamayim Chutz La'ir. And with this ditch, the water will flow then out of the city. It's a drainage system. In the Skalkel Haritz, Kenegerach Tachtoine, Vekurim Lahem. If debris accumulates in the ditch further downstream, they will have to dig out the debris so that the water continues to flow in the ditch and out of town and not overflow because of the accumulation of debris. Those people that are located uphill, they have to come downhill and help the clearing of that debris. As long as the water downhill doesn't keep flowing out of town, the water that's flowing or that's accumulating uphill will simply stand there. It won't flow out. Therefore, it's in the interest of the people uphill to help the clearing of the debris downhill. Aval tachtoinim, but those that are downhill, ein lahem l'sayel elyoinim l'chrois l'malah, there's no expectation of them to help clear the debris uphill. She calls man shelo yerdu elyoinim l'mata toif lahem l'tachtoinim. As long as there's no water flow in the sewage ditch, downhill, it's to their benefit. There's nothing flowing, no garbage, mud, water flowing downhill. So it's a nice dry situation for them. So it's not to their advantage, those that are downhill, to help the clearing of the debris that accumulates uphill. Now, let's turn back to the Gemara. Tanya Nami Hochi. We have a Tanaic source that supports what we have just learned. Now, you can see we have several lines in a frame. There's a Roman numeral number 1, and halfway through the source, a Roman numeral number 2. And in these, in this Tanaic source, there's also a dashed underlining. Let's focus on that initially. In the first half of the source, you can see on the second line of the source, Kulam Misaknis Im Elyona. Everyone assists with the clearing of the debris for the people upstream. So that we discussed in Rav Yehuda's comment on Karya Denara, where everyone, the lower ones, help the upper ones. And that's what you see in this Tanaic source. In the second half of the source, there it talks about a sewage ditch. And there it says, Kulan Misaknus Imatachtona, that everyone must assist alongside the lower, the downhill people. And that too is what we saw in Rav Yehuda's comment regarding Maya Dimitra. And hence, this Tanaic source supports the two points made by Rav Yehuda that we called Aleph and Beis, and now let's see it in the text. And we said, Tanyo Nami Hochi, we have a Tanaic, a Braisa that supports Rav Yehuda. Chamesh Ginois Ha Mistapkis Mayim Mimayon Echad. Five Ginos are literally gardens or vegetable patches, places where vegetables, vegetable farms are lined one after the other. So you have five of them that draw water from the same Mayon, live spring. Veniskatel Mayon, and this spring became Mikulkal. Mikulkal is ruined in the sense of debris accumulation. So there's a now poor flow of water. Kulon Misaknois Im Helyoino. All will come to the assistance of the vegetable patch uphill, highest up. So everyone comes to help them. And the Nimseis HaTachtoino, the result will be then that the lowest of them, the lowest of these five, Misakenis, will be helping, assisting Im Kulon, because the lowest one has the next to lowest one above it. And if there is accumulation of debris above that one, the second to last one, again, the last one is going to have to help it. It wants to ensure a free flow of water to itself as well. So the result is that lowest one, the furthest downhill of the vegetable patches, is assisting with all of them. Umisakenis latzma. And if there is an accumulation in front of it, if debris accumulates in front of it, so it will have to help itself. And when that happens, Rashi adds, maybe the obvious, when that happens, so it's helping itself, no one is coming to help along with it. As we indicated earlier, when you're dealing with irrigation water, water needed for cultivation, it's not to the upper people's advantage to have the free flow of water, which, as we said before, lowers the water level, which is not to their advantage. Let's continue now in the source. V'chein chamesh chatzeros shoy mekalchis mayim labiv echad v'neskalki labiv. Here we have five courtyards. This is the municipal scenario. Five courtyards where their wastewater is flowing into a biv, into a ditch, and the ditch became mekulkal. The debris accumulated therein. And Kulon Misaknis Imatachtoina, all of them will have to help the clearing of the debris from the fellow that is downhill, furthest downhill. And Nimseis Elyoino, the result of that will be that the uppermost chotzer, courtyard dwellers, will be helping misakenes in kulon, misakenes lasma, will be helping everyone else, wherever, at whatever point downhill there is a debris accumulation, it's to their advantage, the uppermost guy's advantage, to help in the clearage, and naturally help themselves. And when that happens, they'll be helping themselves alone. The fellows downstream, the courtyard dwellers downhill, don't have to help the clearing of the debris uphill. It's, if anything, that would be to their own disadvantage. Omar Shmuel, Haiman, the Achzik Beraksa Denar. Here we have a new point. There is a new marking that we want to note as well. On the side, we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading. The crown shape introduces Hachzaka Bekarka, the taking possession of ground, B'mokim Shepoigeya, where your possession of the ground, and it's not just possession, but when you possess ground, you're also going to likely build upon it. That has a negative effect, umachbid, and creates a burden, alacherim, on others. So we'll see a couple of illustrations of that. So now the Gemara. So Shmuel tells us, Haiman de achzik beraksa denaro chatzifa have seluki lo misalkino lei. First we'll translate literally, and then we'll take a look in the Rashi for more explanation. One who takes possession of ground, baraksa denar, on the river banks, is considered an act of chutzpah. It is detrimental to the public. However, we do not have the power to remove him, to kick him off. Now, let's take a look at the Rashi. Under the Gemara text, the upper part of the narrow lines, Haiman da achzik baraksa denara b'shnei aparsayim. Means during the years of the Persian empire, hayakarka, the ground, mufker l'chol ha'kirim la'achzik bo v'fro l'melech taska. It was available for the taking for anyone in the public that is willing to pay the tax of that property. Dehu mas shel karka. Taska is, if you use a little letter reversal there, you would see the word, in the word taska, you can see the word tax. If you took the kuf and put it in front of the samach, you see tax. And that's what it is. It's a tax on ground. If a person were to pay the taxes for parcels of ground that are on the riverbanks. And the reference here is rather specific. It's a place where boats dock. And v'tzorch mokum poni harbe l'forki masos svinas l'toyen mitzorchan u'mosian, and where boats dock with their merchandise, you need a large open area for the purpose of room for the merchandise, whether it's for loading up the boats or unloading the cargo. Vizeh, and then this guy comes along that we're describing in the Gemara. Hichzik, he takes possession. Livnoi shom binyan o lachrosh v'lizra, either to build a structure there or to cultivate that area, which thereby deprives the boats and the boat cargo from being stored. Stored meaning unloaded and loaded at that point. There's no more room. This guy's taken over. And we mentioned that it's chutzpah. He's having an adverse effect on the public welfare, but from letter of the law, we can't get him off. However, the Gemara continues. V'ho'idna, it means nowadays. Nowadays represents a later point in time from the initial statement of Shmuel. V'ho'idna de kakasvi parsoi, and now that the Persians write the following. And I must say that what you see in the Gemara does not reveal what the actual understanding is. So we have words of the Gemara that we'll have to follow with the Rashi, who fills in what I would say is the main point that's not in the text of the Gemara. But first, the text of the Gemara. Nowadays, the Persians, when a person has possession of property, they near the water, they write the following: Kanilach ad molei tzavori sus yamaya. You own the property along the water into the water itself, meaning into the river, until you reach the depth of water that would reach the neck of a horse. So that's kind of deep, so that you own the property along the riverbanks. Of course, we're assuming that this is a continuation of the previous scenario where you paid the taxes, so you become the owner of the property, and you own it into the river itself. Now that's the practice, Saluki Nami Misalkinon Lei. It sounds a little ironic here, but now we will remove the party that builds over there. So now, as I said, the main information is missing, in my opinion, at least in the Gemara text. Take a look at the Rashi. Let's do it together. Rashi, we continue on the fifth wide line under the Gemara. Vo'idno dekasvi parsoi le'oison ha'loitfin sodois shal svasanor. Now the Persians record regarding those that take possession of the land and pay the taxes along the river banks. Kanilach hasode ad toch hanor melot savor asus. You have become the owner of the ground into the water until the depth of a horse's neck. Valoichen geidren gederon rochik minanor. Now here is the ikur. This is the main point. Those people who acquired the land, what they would do is they would fence off the land. However, fence off the land far away from the river. Shalalikakel is Mokum Arabim, in order to leave that space near the river available, so as not to injure the public, to not to be a problem, not to be a problem individual for the public. Ve'in bo echod v'hichsik min hageder uletzad hanor. If someone were now to come along and take possession of the land from the fence toward the river, misalkinonle, we will remove him lefi shei kenuya lebal hagoder ato chamayim, because the property is owned by the fellow who put up the fence from the fence into the water. So the people that bought fields, bought property, acquired property near a river, the deed that they have to that land indicates that they own the land, the field, all the way into the river to a horse neck's depth of water. Their practice was to build fences far away from the river, but the property itself was still privately owned. Therefore, with the fences built far away from the river, no one else had a right to come along and try to take possession of that land. I'll just have to assume that those who bought the fields that we just described paid their taxes, so there's no more availability of that land for others to come and pay the tax. And being that the land is privately owned, no one else can come along and build structures over there. And therefore, if someone does try to do that, we will remove him. Now, let's go back to the Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, Haiman de Achsik Beini Achi Ubeini Shufi. This is our second crown shape. And again, we're talking about someone taking possession of land. And we are also at this point beginning a very long topic that will continue till the balance of today's shiur. And on the side of the one there are no say our topic heading, we've indicated Dino de Bar Metzra, the laws regarding Bar Metzra. Bar Metzra is a reference to someone that is that owns property on a common border. In general terms, before we go further into the Gemara, the classic case of Bar Metzra would involve a situation of someone who owns a field where there are other fields bordering on his field, and the owner of the field in question, the owner wants to sell the field. To whom does he sell the field? Well, you might think he can sell to anyone he likes. We say, not so. Everything else being equal, he is expected to sell it to those that are bordering the field, the neighbors. The neighbors have first right, first crack at buying it. And the reason for that is that when a assuming that the neighbors are interested in expanding their landholding, it's to his advantage and convenience that when plowing, he can just continue plowing into the bordering field, into the next field. So that in a case that a field is being sold, who has first rights to its purchase? The Bar Metzra, the one who's on the border. You might ask, what happens if there's several owners of surrounding lands? How then is the division to take place? How is the sale, and unto whom is the sale made? We'll see more about that in the Gemara. Now, the concept of Dina de Bar Metzra basically says that if you're a purchaser of land, you should be careful not to buy the land ahead of a current neighbor. Don't buy the land. Yield your purchase to one of the neighbors. Rashi is very careful to point out that the concept of Dina de Bar Metzra, which is based on a posik, the Asisa Hayosher Vatoiv, you're expected to do Hayosher Vatoiv Beinei Hashem, that which is straight and good in the eyes of God, is an expectation that rests upon the purchaser. So if you're an outside purchaser, you're an outsider who's purchasing, you are to yield to the existing neighbor, the current neighbor of that land. Now we go back to the Gemara after giving a general introduction to the concept of Dino de Bar Metzra. Rav Yehuda, in the name of Rav, says, Hayman de Achsik Beini Achi Ubeini Shutfi, one who takes possession of land that is located between lands owned by brothers or lands owned by partners. Chatzifa Have. That's an act of chutzpah. Why are you, as an outsider, taking possession of land that exists between lands owned by brothers or partners? Rashi, in the middle of the wide lines, Beini Achi, Sode Hoimedes Likach Betaska, a field. We'll call it this. It's called even to this day a tax sale, and there's a field that is up for grabs if someone comes to pay the taxes. V'sodos shnei achim smuchin lo mikan mikan, and to either side of the tax sale field are fields owned by brothers, one on one side and one brother on the other side. So a person who, an outsider that comes in to pay the taxes and take possession of the field that's located between two brothers or between two partners, the Gemara says, Chatzifa Have, that's an act of chutzpah, sluki lo misalkina le. According to the first opinion, we cannot, though, remove him from there. Rav Nachman Omar, nami misalkinon. According to Rav Nachman, we can remove him. V'im ishum dina de bar metzra lo mesalkinon le. Rashi says, and once again, you have an instance where the words of the Gemara without the Rashi are very hard to understand. What does the E Mishum Dina de Bar Mitzvah refer to? So Rashi says, and let's read it together, the E Mishum Dina de Bar Mitzvah, im einon, if the two fields on either side of this tax field are lo achim velo shutfin, they're not brothers, they're not partners, ela mikayach matzronus boyin al hamachzik, they might come with a claim on the outsider who pays the taxes for that middle field, with the claim, the oimrim, and say, onu hayinu mitzapim lekachta shenutzrichim lekarka, we anticipated taking possession of that land, we need the property. And it's, as we said before, it's beneficial to a person to buy property near his existing property and not buy in some faraway location. So if that is the claim of the neighbors, i.e. the neighbors are not brothers, the neighbors are not partners, they're simply people that have a common border with the middle field. So our Gemara in the first opinion said that if the claim is a claim of Bar Metzra, the Gemara said in number one was, we do not remove the outsider that paid the tax. And Rashi uses a rather sharp term. He says, Delo ichbas lon ledino de Bar Metzra klal. According to, once again, the first opinion, we don't pay heed to the concept of the Dina de Bar Metzra. We go on in the Gemara text. Do you notice on the first wide line of the Gemara, number two, Nahardoi Amri, Afilu Mishum Dina de Bar Metzra Misalkinon Lei. Even if the claim of the parties on either side of the tax field are merely coming because of the Bar Metzra claim, we will remove that outsider who's paying the taxes for that middle property, giving the border owners first choice. Mishum Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, V'yosisa ha-yosher v'atoy b'nei Hashem. You're expected to do that which is proper and good in the eyes of God. And Rashi adds, once again, Rashi is invaluable. He says, V'yosisa ha-yosher v'atoy, we'll read Rashi together, Dovar shi'yata mechzer kolkach. You're an outsider. And if you don't get this particular field, it's not a big loss to you. Shetimtza karkois v'mokam acher. You're an outsider anyway, so you'll find other property somewhere else. And don't cause the burden for the current border owner to have, for him to find property somewhere else, and then his property will be scattered, be divided, one here, one there. So allow the current border owner to access this property, so his property is not chalukin, is not split a little here and a little there. Let's turn back to the Gemara. Second wide line. Also, a person came along, once again, a field that's up for sale. And someone comes along, Imlich Bey, he consults with the current border owner. So there's someone that has a piece of property already next to the land in question, the land that's up for sale. An outsider comes along and asks the border owner. And border owner says, go ahead, you buy it, I'm not interested. Omar Lay, the Gemara continues, Omar Lay is the purchaser asks, Ezel Izvon, he asks the Bar Metzra, the border owner, is it okay for me, the outsider, to buy this land? And the owner, the border owner says, yeah, go right ahead. Question. Tzorech lemikna minei olo? Do we need a kinyan gesture to bind him to his word or not? Or is his word enough? A kinyan is something like the exchange of a vessel, a utensil. Oftentimes we use a handkerchief to establish the kinyan. It's a gesture, we'll say, that concretizes, that makes official one's words or one's commitment. So do you need to do that over here? And here you'll see two opinions. Ravin Omar, lo tzorech lemikna minei. You don't need to do that. The fact that he said, go ahead and buy it, is enough. Nardoi, Amri, Sorech Lemikno Minehi. Nardoi is of the opinion that that the kinyan is necessary. And if you don't make the kinyan, the border owner can turn around one day and say, I was just kidding. And the reason that I told you to go ahead and buy it instead of my showing interest was to keep the price down. Because if I would have come along to the owner of the land that's selling it, and he knows that I'm a border owner and that I have a special interest in it, he'll jack up the price. So I encouraged you to appear as a buyer, but it was only to keep the price lower, not because I was serious about it. So the Nardoi says, if you want to make sure that the border owner who's saying to you, the outsider, go ahead and buy it and not back out on you someday, make a kinyan. The Gemara continues, V'hilchasot sorach lemikna minei. And the Gemara rules that you have to make the kinyan. Hashto, the amris sorach lemikna minei. And now that we say the kinyan is a restrictive factor, an integral factor, Ilo kanu minei, if a kinyan was not made, then Iker Vizol, if there's an increase in price or decrease in price, Bir Shusei, it's considered as having taken place in the possession and the domain of the border owner, the neighbor. Let's take a look at Rashi, four lines from the end. Hashtu the Amr Soch Limiknamine, Yim Kain, Yain Kinyono Shalze Klum. This is a rather tricky word. The term Kinyono means acquisition, not to be confused with the word Kinyon in the context of a gesture that we indicated before. So now that we have said that you need to have the kinyan gesture, let us say the purchaser didn't do that with the neighbor, but rather went ahead, this outsider went ahead and bought the property without having made a kinyan with the neighbor. So his acquisition, the word here, ein kinyono, his acquisition is worthless, is meaningless. And what ramification does that have? Im Iker Oizol Ara, if the value of this land, we'll say improperly acquired land, happens to go up in price, Oizol, or goes down in price, that price fluctuation, Bereshusa de Bar Metzra Iker Oizol, it's considered as if it took place in the under the ownership of the neighbor. V'lo yosef v'lo yigra halokeach milekabel domim shenosan ba. After all said and done, if the neighbor wants to buy the land, he'll have to pay, and we said that he has a right to buy that land. He has first crack at it. What price will he pay to this outsider that took possession of it without having made the kinyan with the neighbor? What's the price he's going to pay? Because in the course of time, there was price fluctuation. So the Gemara is telling us, as Rashi explains, that the neighbor will pay whatever the outsider paid for it. Not any more if the price went up, and not any less if the price fell. And so we'll read that phrase again in the Rashi. V'lo yigora halokeach milekabel domim shenosan ba. The outside purchaser will not accept any loss by taking any money less than that which he paid for it. D'chi eiker, if it went up in price, revocha de bar metzerhu, that's profit that the neighbor, the border owner, can benefit. V'chizol, and if it goes down in price, say to the bar mitzvah, it's that neighbor's loss. Okay, now we turn back to the Gemara. And we have a phrase that's underlined. Maybe before we read that, let's just read the words of the Gemara again that we saw in Rashi. Now that we've said that the kinyan is a binding factor, if the outside purchaser did not make a kinyan with the bar metzra, Iker Vizol, when we said that the outsider did not make a kinyan with the bar metzra, we add, but he went ahead, this outsider went ahead and bought the land anyway, and Iker, the land went up in value, or Zol went down in value, Birshusei, that's considered in the price fluctuation within the domain of the neighbor. And therefore, the neighbor that's going to want to take possession of the land will offer as payment to the outsider that improperly bought it, whatever that outsider had paid to the original owner. Not more, not less. I hope everyone will agree with me that the Gemara words itself are, as far as being explanatory, are quite terse. Without the Rashi, this type of Gemara would be shrouded in mystery. We continue. Zovan Bemea, an outside purchaser who did not make a kinyan with the bar metzra, and he paid 100 and it's worth 200, and the issue comes back. Now this guy's going to have to leave the land because he did not make a kinyan with the bar metzra, which would have otherwise entitled this outsider to retain the land. And the outsider paid 100. In reality, it's worth 200. Chazina, we evaluate. E lekule alma ka mozila umazvin. If the original owner would have given this reduction to anybody, Yohiv le mea v'shokile, the border owner, who the bar metzra, will pay this guy, this outside purchaser, what he paid, the 100, and take the land. The e lo, if the original owner would not have given that discount to just anybody, give it just to this guy. But if it were a purchase to anyone else, including the neighbors, he would have taken 200. Yohiv le, then the border owner, has to pay this purchaser Moson Vishokile. He'll have to pay him 200. Zovan Bimoson Vishavyo Mea. Here we have an opposite situation where the outside purchaser paid more than its value. He paid 200 when it's actually worth 100. And now the question is, what is the border owner who has first crack at this land, what is he to pay this purchaser? Sovor mina, the initial thinking it was, motzi omale, the border owner can say to this purchaser, you bought it kind of like as if you're an agent for me. I really had first crack, so... and you intervened. Well, liskuni shadartich v'lo lavisi. I sent you to make things good for me, not to mess me up. And with this in mind, the initial thinking is that the matron, the neighbor, could get away with paying 100 and that's it. Ah, yeah. The fact that this outsider, he paid 200. He overpaid and cannot do things that will mess up the real one that's entitled to it, namely the border owner. So that's the sovor mina expression of the Gemara, means that's the initial thinking. Omar le Mark Shisha Breda Rav Chisda to the Ravashi. Mark Shisha tells Ravashi, Hachi Amri Nahardoi Mishum Rav Nachman. Thusly says Nardoi in the name of Rav Nachman, Einoi no le karkois, the concept of oino is a term that has to do with mischarging. We studied that extensively in the fourth parak of our Masechta. And this case will be more specific. The concept of overcharging doesn't apply to land. If we can just be, just make a general comment, that is that there's certain things that you can't, we don't assign a value to it. So to speak of land being worth 100, and the guy paid overpaid, he didn't overpay. Ain't no look how it goes. There's no fixed value that you can assign to land. And as I said, that's a very general comment. I don't mean it to be taken literally, but as far as a means of illustrating the point, we can say that. And with that in mind, the border owner can't come with a claim to the purchaser. you paid too much and thereby messed me up, because the concept of paying too much is simply inapplicable. And I guess it's obvious that if the purchaser paid 200 for it, he has a right to insist when he has to release the land in favor of the border owner, you pay me 200 and you can get the land that you in fact had first crack at. Zofin le griva d'ara b'mitzah nichsei. We can translate it literally, and once again, there's a lot more to the case than just the mere translation. And by the way, we have a little illustration to the side of the Gemara text, which helps to illustrate this. There's a parcel of... You can see we have a series of squares, one drawn inside within the other. These squares are a bird's eye view of fields. There's we'll call it the middle square, is a field that's owned by an owner. And he sold a parcel of his own field that's indicated on the diagram by the internal square. So this guy then sold a parcel of land within his own land to an outsider. Now, we'll read that in the words of the Gemara again. Zoven le griva d'ara. Griva means a small parcel of land, b'mitzah nichsei, in the middle of his own property. What issue comes up? The issue that's going to come up is what happens when that landowner wants to sell the rest of his land. Is that, we'll call it the new guy on the scene, who bought that internal parcel of land, is he considered a matzron? Now, he has a common border with on all four sides of that middle piece of property. And if that's the case, so then he would have at least as strong a claim on that piece of property as all the outside border owners would have. Or do we say that there's some kind of trickery taking place over here, and he was made into a matzvin in some artificial fashion, and we would not call him a legitimate border owner, and therefore he would have no claim on the rest of that owner's property when he wants to sell it. So now let's continue in the Gemara. Chazinon, we evaluate, we look at this. Iidis he oiziburis he. If that internal piece of land where we have that star that indicates the called mitzah nichsei, that internal parcel of land was of a unique quality, unique meaning different quality than the rest of that owner's land. So we evaluate if it's idis he or iziburis he. if it's exceptionally high quality or extremely poor quality land, meaning different than the rest of the surrounding ground. And as such, it's something that people would sell as a separate parcel of land. It's not just an arbitrary drawing of an internal square of property and marking it off, as I say, arbitrarily, but rather because of its difference in quality from the surrounding area, a person would sell it as a separate parcel of land. If that's the case, then zvini. It's a legitimate sale, and the outside border owners, as you can see on the diagram, in the event that the rest of that middle parcel of land would be sold, they can't get rid of him and say you have no claim, that you don't have any business being here, so to speak. You have no claim to challenge us. He had a legitimate right to buy that internal piece of property, and he too becomes one of the border owners vis-a-vis the middle piece of property when eventually that owner wants to sell off the rest of his land. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ve'i lo, if it's not a unique of unique quality, but it's, as we said before, an arbitrary drawing of a square within his property, and that internal square where we saw the star, that internal property is the same quality as all the immediate surrounding ground of that middle square. Then in Arumi Kamarim, we suspect subterfuge or foul play. And now we take a look at Rashi at the top, Evilo. Then Arumi Kamarim, there's something underhanded here. Im Bosi Likach Etzlom, if I were to come to buy the middle property in and of itself, Isalkuni, they would remove me. They would say that, hey, I'm a mere outsider, and I have no right to buy that internal land. They have first crack. So, you know what I'm going to do? Ekne ani beisa be'emtza. I'll buy that internal square. Beisa is a measure of land. I'll buy a beisa of land in the middle of the of that property. Ve'ye'ani matzron l'chol ruach. And I therefore have a common border on four sides. And then I'll buy the rest of this owner's land on all four sides of my internal parcel of land. And they won't be able to remove me from half of the land on each side. If you have, let's say, two people competing for, two border owners competing for one parcel of land, so we would divide that area between the two. So now that I've become an owner of that internal parcel, I have a claim of at least a half on each surrounding side. Hilkach mehashto misalkino, now, and that's what we move in and seeing this subterfuge, we, the halacha, comes and removes him from the outset. As you can see in the continuation of the Gemara, there is an extensive series of triangles, one of the series markings, and on the side under the mivneh, heading the structural note, mikrim. These are cases deis or less bo mishum dina de bar mitzvah. Cases, some of them where there will or sometimes not exist the rule of bar mitzvah. So once again, we go back to a scene where someone has a piece of land and he's going to be parting from his land. In this particular case, matona. He wants to give his land as a gift. He wants to give it as a gift to whom? Well, to some outsider, some friend of his, some relative, whoever, but he's not giving his land to one of the neighbors. Does he have to take into consideration that the land that he's now giving away as a gift has neighbors that border it? No. matana lespa mishum dina davar metra. The receiver of the land that he got as a gift is entitled to maintain possession of it. He doesn't have to yield it to one of the existing border owners. Omar Amemar, I kosav le achrayas. If the gift giver wrote in the, we'll say, the contract or the deed that he that assigns the property to the receiver, he wrote a statement of guarantee. That's kind of unusual. When you we're familiar with the idea of a guarantee when someone buys land, so he paid out good money for the land. He paid money. He wants to get a guarantee that if he should end up losing the property to some kind of previous creditor, he can get compensation. The idea of a guarantee in the case of land received as a gift is kind of an anomaly. So what are we to make of that? So the Gemara says if a guarantee was written into a matona, isba mishum dina dabar metzra, where we're going to conclude it must have definitely been a sale, and since it was a sale, because otherwise you wouldn't write a guarantee into a shtar matona, there must certainly have been it must have been a sale, and as such, then the rules of Bar Metzro will apply. Number two, Mochar Kol Nechasov Liechod. A person that owned properties in different areas, and he sold all of his holdings to one person. Now, each property in this sale naturally has matzronim, has border owners. However, in this case, where the owner of each one of the properties found a buyer for all of his holdings, wherever they may be, different areas, les bo mishum dina de bar metzra, the border owners of the respective properties cannot lay claim on each property that was sold to this particular one buyer. Rashi explains here, Les Behu Mishum Dina Devar Metzra, and Rashi that we're looking at is across from here, Shelo Tiknu Chachomim L'Lokech L'Stalik. The Chachamim, when they enacted the din of Bar Metzra, which imposes upon the purchaser the need for his removal, for his relinquishing his purchase, La'asos Hayosher Batov L'Bala Meitzar, the removal of the Lokech in favor of the border owner is in general a fulfillment of doing the yosher and tov, that which is proper and good in the eyes of God. The purchaser is not expected to remove himself in order to fulfill that shehu ra'a lamocher, which would in the end be injurious, detrimental to the seller. Now in this case, just imagine we have a seller of parcels of land that are in disparate areas. He found one purchaser. It's a very, very convenient, a good deal, so to speak, that he found one person that's interested in buying all of the parcels of land. The problem here is that this purchaser will not have gone through with the deal unless he can get all of those parcels. If one of those parcels is not going to be part of the deal, he's not going to buy. Well, if he's not going to buy, then the seller is going to lose out. He's trying to sell his land, and he finally found someone that's going to buy. If imposing restrictions on the seller in anticipation of his fulfilling Dina de Bar Metzra is going to result in something detrimental to the seller, then the dinim of Bar Metzra are off. As Rashi says, Shezeh lo yikne hashar, shimshuch es yodoi b'shvil zu. this purchaser isn't going to buy the other parcels of land. He's going to withdraw himself because of this land that, let's say, the border owners are laying claim to. And where there would be a loss to the seller, so the rabbis did not enact the din, the rule of bar mitzvah, of first claim granted to border owners. Kidomer lekamon, in here Rashi is quoting the Gemara later on, hani tsairi vahani shoru les bar mitzvah. We'll see what that quote means later in when we get to that in the Gemara. Now, let's turn back to our Gemara text. A person is selling his properties. Lebailim horishainim. A person is selling now to the original owners. So you have someone that's a current land owner. Where did he get it from? He got the land from Bailim horishainim. Les bo mishum dino de bar metzra. In a case like that as well, when you're the purchaser just so happens to be a previous owner, so he can maintain possession of the land and not have to yield to the other border owners. Number three, Zovan me'akum v'zovin le'akum les ba mishum dina de bar metra. So we have 2 points, and that's why we've highlighted them with little diamonds, point one and two. A person bought a piece of land from an idol worshipper, from a heathen idol worshipper. Or a person sold property to a heathen idol worshipper. In both of these cases, les bo mishum dina de bar metra. The idea of leaving first, relinquishing the land in favor of a border owner doesn't apply. And now the Gemara elaborates. And the numbers that you see correspond to the diamonds that we had, 1 and 2. Zovan me'akum, when you as an outsider are coming to purchase a parcel of land that has border owners. And the land that you're buying is land sold to you by a heathen idol worshipper. Less, we said that the rules of bar mitzvah don't apply. The Omar lay, the Jewish land purchaser can say to any of the border owners, Ari Avrachi Loch Mimatzra, I did you a favor. I got rid of a lion from your borders. We view the heathen idol worshipper as a threat, as a constant and ongoing threat to the Jewish neighbors. So now some outsider comes along and says, I got rid of the lion, I got rid of the threat. And as Rashi says, "Ein lucha yoshev atov miseh." If the whole din of bar mitzvah is in the hopes of fulfilling that which is straight and good in the eyes of the Almighty, what could be better than that, than coming in and doing an act that's beneficial to all the surrounding neighbors? Number two, zovin lakum. If a person sold land to a heathen idol worshipper, so the akum, which is an abbreviation of Oved Kechevim U'Mazalos, the worshipper of stars and the zodiac. If he's the buyer, then the surrounding border owners don't have any claim. And the reason is very simple. Akum Vadai Lav Bar V'Asisa Yoshev Atovu. We mentioned this a few times already, and Rashi seems to emphasize it throughout this sukya, that the din of bar mitzvah, do that which is right, is a law, it's an expectation that's imposed upon the buyer. Yield your purchase, do a good thing, yield your purchase to the border owner. But when you're dealing with a heathen, barbaric idol worshipper, we don't envision, or the concept of doing good has no applicability to such individuals. So since the concept of doing that which is proper and good in the eyes of the Almighty God of the universe doesn't have any application to a barbaric heathen idol worshipper, so there's no expectation of his yielding to the current Jewish border owners. So as a result, we say that in a case like that that you sold, maybe it wasn't the best thing to do, and we're going to see that in a second. You didn't choose a very good purchaser. You chose to sell your land to a very to an undesirable individual. But that having been done, the border owners do not have any claim. The Gemara continues, Shamuti vadi mishamtinon lei. The word shamuti has to do with excommunication. We will excommunicate the fellow who sold the land, ad mekabele kol oinse de osi le machmose, until he, the seller, until that seller accepts upon himself any to compensate the neighbors for any oinus or mishaps, even beyond one's control, that happened to befall as a result of this undesirable purchaser that has now become their neighbor, and we suspect him of any of all kinds of wrongdoings to the neighbors, and therefore the seller, who, as we said before, made a poor choice in selling to a barbaric heathen idol worshiper, the seller will remain in excommunication until he accepts upon himself to compensate for any loss that this undesirable purchaser may impose. There is a note that Tosfos makes here, Mishamtino Lei Ad Mekabel V'chulei, Dafka She Yisrael Roitze Likach B'domim Shenosa Nahakum. This whole din, this, we'll call this a strict attitude that we have toward the purchaser, is limited to circumstances that there was a Jew that was willing to pay the same money, the same amount that the heathen idol worshiper was willing to pay. So we turn to the seller with this claim. Why did you opt to sell to such an undesirable individual when you could have sold to a fellow Jew? If, however, according to what Tosfos seems to be saying, if, however, he wasn't going to get such a good price from another Jew, he got a tremendous price from the heathen idol worshipper, so there we would not impose this restriction, this strict ruling on the seller. Number four, mashkanta les bo mishum dina de bar mitzra. The word mashkanta, I'm sure many of you are familiar with by now. The piece of land in question was a piece of land that was held onto by a lender of money. So a lender of money received from a borrower as collateral a piece of land. So during the course of the duration of the debt, the outstanding debt, you have a lender holding onto the land. In another two lines of Gemara, the Gemara will analyze etymologically the word mashkanta, the shchuna gabe. He is dwelling by it, meaning that the lender, once he receives property as a mashkon, he becomes a legitimate presence, what ramification is there in describing him as a legitimate presence? And it is that if that borrower decides to sell the land to the lender, that lender now is a legitimate purchaser, and he does not have to yield to any of the other previous border owners. Once having received the land as collateral, he himself becomes a legitimate presence, having no less claim to it in the case of a subsequent purchase made to him than any of the other border owners. Now, let's continue in the Gemara. So we said that mashkanta les be mishum dina de bar mitzra. If the borrower decides to sell to that lender who has been holding onto the land as collateral, he, the lender slash purchaser does not have to yield to any of the existing neighbors. The Omar Ravashi, Omru Li Savi Demasa Mechasya. Ravashi tells us that the elders of the town of Mechasya told me, my mashkanta, what is the meaning of the word? Tishchunagabei. It is dwelling by him. My nafka mina, what practical halachic ramification is there in knowing that that's the meaning of the word mashkata, ladino de bar metzra, it has its ramifications regarding our very case, that he, the lender, now purchaser, does not have to yield to any of the other existing land owners, border owners. Number five, a person is selling a parcel of land because the parcel of land is far from where he, let's say, from where he lives. And he wants to sell the parcel of land in order to get money and buy land near where he is. So the man selling finds a buyer for the land. And having found a buyer for the land, the seller will now have the convenience of buying, have the ability to buy a convenient parcel of land located near where he, the seller, lives. That's what the Gemara means when it says limkor berachik v'ligol bekarov. The sale of the land in question is a sale of a piece of land. Rachik means far away. That's far away from where the seller lives. V'ligol means in order to buy bekarov, something nearby. Or berav v'ligol b'yofe, or a person is selling a parcel of land that for him is of poor quality, but as a result he'll now be able to buy a parcel of land of good quality. Less ba mishum dina de bar metzra. We don't expect the purchaser in either of these cases to yield to any of the existing border owners. Rashi addresses this. Ein ba mishum dina de bar metzra. The Rashi that we're looking at is a little more than halfway down the narrow lines. We say in these cases the din of bar metzra doesn't apply. Lefi she'ein lanu lehafsid mocher mishum toiv v'yosher de masron. We are not going to impose any, we'll say, loss to the seller in order to achieve benefit for the border owners. Just like we're trying to do good to the border owner, we want to do good also for the seller. If we're going to start imposing any delays in this matter, namely, this seller found someone, okay, he's an outsider, but he found someone now to buy the land. If we're going to impose some kind of delay until the seller strikes a deal with one of the current border owners, Shemo Benkach u Benkach, it could be that in the interim, as a result of imposing this delay, Timocher Zu Sheroitzes Eliknos, that property that the seller wanted to acquire, he won't be able to anymore. So that once again, if you have someone that has, the seller has, is selling because of these considerations, either he has a chance to buy something nearby to him, or something of a desirous quality for him, and he's found a buyer, he's an outside buyer. We want the deal to go through, because otherwise, any delay, and part of that delay involves finding one of the border owners to buy the land, that could cause a loss to the seller. So in our interest to accomplish Vazisa Yoshev Tov, if that is going to come at the expense of Asiyas HaYoshev Tov to someone else, So we don't impose the din of bar mitzvah. And now we're up to number six. There are three cases. We've listed them by numbers. Lekarga, ulemezoni, ulekvura. Les ba mishum dina de bar mitzvah. Karga is a head tax paid to the king. Mizoni, that's a reference to the sustenance owed to a widow or to girls that that are the daughters of a woman that married a man as her second marriage. This man accepted upon himself the obligation of supporting her daughters. So when we're talking about, we'll talk about the sale of land in order to get money for paying off a head tax, paying off these sustenance debts. Ulikvura, what's kvura? Burial. A piece of land is being sold in order to get money to bury the dead. So we say less bar mishum dina de bar mitzvah. The rules of bar mitzvah do not apply. And to illustrate how urgent the sales of land for these purposes are, the Amri Nardo, and the Nardo say in another context, but with the same goals, namely sales for lekarga lemezoni lekvura, mizavninon below achrozosa. We will sell land that was inherited by orphans. We say orphans, often we're talking about minors that are orphans. But the land needs to be sold because of one of these debts. We will sell their inherited land without a public auction. When in other cases property of Yesemim is sold, so we'll sell it, but at a public auction so as to get the highest price for the benefit of the orphans. But in these cases, the urgency of the sale, the immediacy of getting the money is so great that we're going to sell even lands of Yesemim, of orphans, without the public auction, which is a lengthy process. And with that in mind, we understand why we're not going to impose the laws of Bar Mitzvah as well, if the sale of the land in question was for paying off one of these debts. Number seven. Here again we have 3 points. Leisha. Leisha is a reference to a woman that sold land to, I should say, a woman that bought land. She is the purchaser. That's the lamed leisha, means land was sold to a woman. U leyasmi, orphans. U leshutfi, partners. Less ba mishum dina de bar mitzvah. You'll notice that there's a bracketed section following which we pick up with another triangle, number 8. But in the meantime, we'll take a look at Rashi toward the end of the narrow lines. Leisha liyasmi lishutfi, mochar leisha, a man sold to a woman. She is the purchaser. Lo mesalkina la, we're not going to expect her to remove herself from the land in favor of one of the of this land's border owners. It's not the proper etiquette to expect a woman to seek out to travel from place to place in order ulavakesh mishiyesh lo karkois limkar. She wants to make a real estate investment. And if we're going to remove her from this property, she's then going to be forced into a position to go from here to there, from here to there, trying to find a seller of property that she goes to. And we say that's not proper etiquette and modesty when it comes to how we treat women. Yes, it might not sound, we'll say, politically correct or what have you, but Judaism is exceptionally sensitive to the unique honor and modesty due to women, and as a result of our sensitivity to that, you find, we'll call it different standard. I don't think we'll say the word double standard, but a different standard, a dual standard in our dealings. And with that in mind, and especially because this whole din of bar mitzvah is based on the concept of asisa yoshmatov, as Rashi goes on to say immediately, uma shebo liyodo rishon, and now that she's we'll say the first property she's chanced upon that she can buy, ein lonu lomar, we're not now going to impose v'yosisa yoshvatov to in our interest in doing that which is straight and good, laharchiko me'olof, to now distance her from the land in favor of the border owners, putting then her putting her in a precarious position, which precarious in the sense of that which could lead to immodesty. V'chein yasmi, similarly with regard to orphans. We can't expect of orphans, and I generally speaking assume that we're referring to minors, they're viewed in the realm of being weak and helpless type people, that they, if once you sold land to them, with a court executor that obviously deals with their financial needs, we don't expect them to wander from place to place to find a seller. The third example under number 7 was Shutfi. V'shutof shemochar loy l'chavero. We're talking about partners. There was a piece of land that was held jointly, and one of the partners sold out. And who did he sell to? To his other partner. V'shutof shemochar loy l'chavero l'chelko b'sodeh. Shehein Shufin Ba, one sold out to his friend, to his partner, his holding in the land that they are currently partners in. And Lono Lasalko Mishumdina de Bar Metzra, we can't tell the partner to leave the Lomar Einata Ba Bechelik Chavercha, with the claim that, well, you were partners, you owned your half, he owned his half, and that you have no, we'll say, connection to your partner's half. And so we can't come with that claim to say, Ein ato bo b'chel chavercho elo kechara matzronim v'kocheno imoch. And the claim would be that we're saying you cannot make, that you as a partner, you had your half, he had his half, and there are other border owners to take into consideration, and that when the partner sells out to you, you cannot be the exclusive owner of that partner's half. And by saying then, you would have to divide with the other border owners whatever your partner sold to you. Well, we don't say that. And the kevan de lo nisbarer chelek, since kevan de lo nisbarer chelko, when we say that a piece of land is jointly held, we don't say this half is A's and the other half is B's. It's not clear which portion is whose. Hare hu kishoche bakula. We therefore view him as if he is dwelling upon the whole parcel of land. And that would give him greater strength in retaining it than the other border owners. We mentioned that the upcoming section of Gemara is in brackets. Following the brackets, you see number 8. Rashi, regarding this upcoming section that we have in brackets, in his initial comment makes in his initial comment he indicates that this is not dealing with Dina de Bar Metzra, but rather Eitza, counsel, with the goal of fulfilling Hayosher Vahatov. And here the counsel is directed at the seller. As a seller, what to whom shall you sell in the spirit of doing that which is the right thing to do in the eyes of God? So we're going to see a section of Gemara in brackets where a person is confronted with choices unto whom to sell, and the Gemara will dictate how to make the choice, which will represent the proper choice, and thereby fulfill the Asisa HaYosher V'Atov, thou shalt do that which is good and proper in the eyes of God. I know that we might sound repetitious here, but after the bracketed section, the Gemara picks up with issues that have to do with Dina de Bar Metzra. And now we continue with the bracketed section. Shchene Ho'ir u'Shchene Sodeh. Once again, you have an example of a Gemara is very, very terse. You have a seller that needs to decide unto whom to sell the land. This seller lives in a neighborhood. He has, naturally, neighbors that live next to him. Those are the Shchene, or his town neighbors, those that he lives near. He also happens to have people that own land next to his land. However, and here's the big trick. The land being sold does not border on any of these people. The land being sold, let's just say it exists in isolation, at a distance from where he has land with neighbors on it. So you have a seller, if we want to keep things simple, you have a seller of land that happens to own two parcels of land. On the one hand, this seller has neighbors that live near him in town. On the other hand, he has border owners that neighbor one of his parcels of land. He has a second parcel of land that's not next to any of these, and that's what he wants to sell. So who should he sell that isolated parcel of land to? To his neighbors in town, or to his, we'll call his agricultural neighbors? And as far, and the answer to that is, he sells it to Shchene Ho'ir Kodmin. The people that he lives near in town, they get first choice. And as you can see, this has nothing to do with Dina de Bar Metzra that we spoke about earlier. Another choice, Shochein v'Talmud Chochem. He has a neighbor, and he has a Torah scholar. Both are interested in buying the land. Who should he give precedence to? Talmud Chochem Kodem. The Torah scholar comes first. Korov v'Talmud Chochem. A choice between a relative or a Torah scholar. Talmud Chochem Kodem. Ibai Eloho. In the last two examples where we saw the Talmud Chochem will come first, we had, we'll say the two, I don't want to, maybe the word losers sounds derogatory, but there were two people that lost out to the Talmud Chochem. There was the Shochein, and there was the Korov. Let's say those are the choices that this seller is confronted with. Ibai Eloho, Shochein v'Korov Mai. A neighbor or a relative, who is first? Toshma, we quote a pasuk from Mishlei, from the book of Proverbs. Toiv shochein korov me'ach rochoik. Better is a near neighbor than a far away brother. So from this we conclude that the neighbor will win out over the relative. And as we indicated before, we go back to Dina de Bar Metzra. Hani Zuzi Tavi, Vahani Zuzi Tekuli. A seller is being offered money.
Rashi, I should say that before we go to Rashi, the seller is offered money. There are two different qualities of money. One is called Zuzi Tovi, good quality coins that have, let's say, a full metallic weight to them. On the other hand, the other party is offering coins that have more, let's say, currency value. They're more commonly accepted. Now, let's take a look at the Rashi together. In the middle of the wide lines, Zuzi Tovi, Zuzi Tkuli, Matsron Shebolor Alamekach, a border owner that's coming to challenge a sale to an outsider, Mevi Mois Shemishkolon Toiv Yoiser Al Shel Lokeach, he's bringing to the deal coins that whose weight is better or more than the outside purchaser. Avol shelo keach tovin v'charifin b'matbea ha'yoytze yoytze mishel matzron v'inami ipcha. And the outside purchaser, however, is bringing coins that have more currency value. They're more more acceptable in the market than the one that the border owner is offering. Rashi says inami ipcha could have the other way around. And in a case like that, where, as they say, we don't say everything is equal. One has one advantage, the other has another advantage. The din of bar mitzvah doesn't apply because, and I think we've seen this kind of a repeating thing, we're not going to impose the din of bar mitzvah when it's going to serve to be a disadvantage to the seller. For whatever reason, the seller might have a greater desire for the coins that the outsider is offering to pay than the border owner is willing to pay. And as such, we will allow the seller to accept those kind of coins that he would prefer, even if it's at the expense of giving precedence to the outsider over the border owner. Number 9, Hani Tsairi Vahani Shori. An outsider and a border owner that send money to a seller. The border owner has his coins wrapped up and tied up and sealed in a pouch. And he doesn't want the pouch to be opened up. And the outsider, the seller, is offering coins that are visible, that are literally untied. I would like to point out that regarding this case of one is offering sealed coins and the other is offering an open package of coins. In the Shita Mekubetzes, you'll find different commentaries explaining these two possibilities. For our purposes, though, let it suffice to say that since the situation of the coins offered by the two parties are different from one another, and the seller may have an interest in receiving one over the other. Therefore, the rules of bar mitzvah don't apply. Now, we're in the middle of the rules of bar mitzvah, is a new trend of thought that applies, that appears now, and that's why you can see we have a slash mark. There's a topic heading on the side. Number one, under the Nosei heading, Mikrim Shiesh Livchoin Ishaech Pudino de Bar Metzra Ilav. Cases where we will have to evaluate whether the rules of Bar Metzra apply or not. And number two, Mikrim She Ma'adifim Esalokeach Alpaneha Matzron. Cases where we will actually prefer the outside purchaser over the border owner. The Gemara. Omar, a border owner, says, Ezel ve'atrach ve'isi zuzi. I'm going to go and trouble myself in order to find cash and then bring it to you. I would like to assume that that's what the border owner is saying, and that's at the same time the there's a ready purchaser who has cash available. So if the border owner is saying, I'm going to toreach, means trouble myself, to come up with the funds, then lo natrinon lei, we don't wait for him. Omar, Ezel, Isizuzi, I'm going to go and bring the money. Chazinon, then now we evaluate. E gavra de omidu, de ozil um Isizuzi, natrinon lei, if he's a man of means, and therefore there's no reason for us to assume that he doesn't have the money, so we'll wait till he brings the money. Here the money is, we'll say, as good as certain, as opposed to the previous scenario where he said, I will atrach, I will trouble myself to come up with the funds. However, the Elo, if he's not a man of means, and all he said was, I'm going to go and bring the money, but we have reason to suspect that it's not so readily available, lo natrino le, we do not wait for him. And now we have a new scenario. Aro dechad uboti dechad. You have a structure that's sitting upon a piece of land. The land is owned by one party, and the house is owned by another party. Let us say the house owner is interested in selling the house. Mori aro me'akev amori boti. The owner of the land upon which that house is sitting can restrict the house seller from selling it to someone else other than himself, the land owner. In other words, the land owner, upon discovering that the house owner is interested in selling, he can dictate to the house owner, you are going to sell the house to me. It's, I think, quite clear that it's to the advantage of that land owner to have a house upon the land that he already owns. The Rashi that accompanies this is found to the lower part of the wide lines. Rashi says, Mori ara ma'akev amori boti. The land owner can restrain or restrict the mori boti, the owner of the house. Shelo limkar binyan liacher, not to sell the house to someone else. Dahil v'hu bo lemochrom v'zet tzorach la. Since the house owner is selling and the land owner needs a house, Tov shiya binyana b'karka shelo v'ika hayosher v'atov. It is only right that the structure should be on the land that he already owns, and that is a fulfillment of hayosher v'atov, doing the right thing. The Gemara continues on that first wide line of the Gemara. Mori boti lo me'akev amori da'ara. The house owner, upon hearing that the landowner wants to sell, that the house owner cannot restrict the landowner and say, you are going to sell it to me. Rashi adds the concept of shochein, of matzron, to this analysis, and says that the owner of the house is not considered a shochein to force the sale of the ground to himself, to the house owner. There's a point that Rashi adds in explaining this. We could look at the Rashi together. Mori boti lo ma'akev amori ara. Shehu, the house owner, eino choshev shochein. Why? L'chisheyagi oi shonav oimei l'stalek minei. My thinking of understanding this Rashi is that a house structure has a certain amount of time that it's designed to stand. At a certain point, the house no longer stands, and therefore, we'll say it has a certain fixed amount of time, and when that end time comes, and the house is no longer there, the guy who owns the house is finished. He's not there anymore. He's off the property. He doesn't own the property. He only owns the house. When the house is gone, so he's gone. And therefore, he's not viewed as a shochen, and which means literally a neighbor, and therefore the house owner cannot restrict the land owner in choosing to whom to sell his land. The Gemara continues, Ara dechad v'dikli dechad. There's a piece of land, and upon that land there is a palm tree owned by someone else. Mori da'ara motzi ma'akev amori dikli. The land owner can restrict the tree owner in selling the tree, whereby the landowner sells, if you're selling your tree, you're going to sell it to me and not to someone else. The other way around, though, is not so. Mori dikli lo motzi ma'akev amori da'ara. The owner of the tree, upon discovering that the landowner wants to sell the land, the owner of the tree cannot insist on the land being sold to him, the tree owner. Here we have a different situation, but a choice must be made. Ara leboti v'ara lezara. There's a Rashi that will take a look at together. Five lines from the end of the Rashi, at the end of the line, Ara Lazara, a piece of land is being sold, and there is a border owner, Hamatsron, the border owner, Chofetz Bal Israel, he wants to buy the land for planting, for cultivation. Falokeach, the outsider, Tzorech Bo, Lebinyan Bayis, he wants to buy the land for erecting a house. Now, let's go back to the Gemara. Ara Leboti va'ara Lazara. Who wins? Yishuv Odif, v'les Bo, Mishum, Dina de Bar Metzra. The concept of settling an area, generally speaking, you find this in the context of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara itself doesn't indicate that we're dealing necessarily only with Eretz Yisrael, but certainly if that were the case, so it would have that added aspect to it. The concept of settling something has a greater value than the consideration of Dina de Bar Metzra. So that even though the one who wants to build the house is an outside purchaser, he gets first choice. And now another halacha. The slash marks, as you can say, you can see they indicate separation of ideas. Each section of Gemara is essentially an idea in and of itself. So afsik Mashunisa orichba dedikla. You have a parcel of land that is up for sale, and there is surrounding the field mashunisa. That's outcropping bedrock that actually serves to be, we'll say, a natural fence around the field. And that outcropping of bedrock, or richba d'dikla, is a row of palm trees that are planted in a dense fashion, meaning without space between them. And those are surrounding the land for sale. What are we to say concerning the Dina de Bar Metzra? I hope you remember, and we didn't dwell on it, but the Din of the Bar Mitzra was giving advantage to an existing neighbor because it's advantageous for a person who already owns land, who's cultivating the land with his plow, to simply continue the plowing, extend the rows of plow of plowing into the next field without having to pick it up and reassemble it somewhere else. What about in a case where the neighboring field though is blocked by Mashuniso Rifa de Dikla? So Chazina, we evaluate. Im Yocho Lahachnis Bo Afilu Telem Echad, if the existing neighbor, the border owner, can bring his plow into this field, even one furrow. In other words, there's a break in the rocks or a gap between the trees that is no wider than one plow furrow in width. So ispa mishum dino dabar bar metzra, then the rule of bar metzra will apply. The logic is applicable in a case like that, even though the access is rather limited, but there is access. It's one furrow's worth of access, one furrow width of access. So he the din of bar metzra, giving the pre-existing neighbor precedence, applies. Ve'ilo, if however the field being sold is totally locked out by this outcropping of rock and or dense tree planting surrounding it, and the only way to get the plow in is by disassembling it and reassembling it in the inner field, then ve'ilo less bo mishum dino de bar mitzvah, then the rule of bar mitzvah does not apply. And some outsider is interested in buying that surrounded property can do so. Hani dalet b'nei matzroni. The kodim chad minay v'zovin. In order to explain this Gemara, let us adopt what the Rambam says in Hilchus Sheinim, Perek Yud Beis Halacha Hei, that we're talking about someone who sold a particular piece of land that's surrounded by four neighbors, four landowners, and he sold it to an outside purchaser who has, as we said, he's a total outsider. And now, one of the surrounding neighbors wants to, force that outsider who bought this internal land to sell. So with that background, we have our Gemara that speaks about four B'nai Matsroni, four border owners. And as we just cited, based on the Rambam, there is an outsider that bought the internal property. And the Kodim Chad Minai V'Zofin, one of the four, lunged forward and said, listen, you know, you're an outsider, and I'm one of the border owners. I want you to sell me the land. Zavine Zavini. It's a legitimate sale. And it would appear from the Gemara then that he becomes the exclusive owner, even though there are three other border owners. But one of them took the initiative of confronting that outside buyer, and the sale is a good sale to him. The kulu asu bahavi adavi. If all four border owners came simultaneously, they came together, and as such, as being border owners, they do have precedence over the outsider. But now, what do? We have four people that are settling in upon one piece of land. So palgu la bekarnezil. It's to be divided up in the karnezil fashion. What is karnezil? So a karen, the term karen or karna is also associated with a diagonal. So if you look in the Rashi, You're looking at an aerial view of the internal field. It will, that internal field with the four border owners, one east, one west, one north, one south, they will divide that internal field in accordance with the diagram you see printed in your Gemara, and the aerial view would be then four triangular portions of land, each one the base of the triangle being the border of that particular pre-existing border owner. That will be what we call an equitable distribution of the land. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.